Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Michelle Pache, and I'm here today with Dr. Michael Rice. We warmly welcome you to the show and thank you for choosing to be with us. Today is October 14th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1 and that puts you into queue to talk with Dr. Rice. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. Now, let's welcome Michael in the process of learning and experiencing Aramaic forgiveness.
Well, thank you, young lady, for that introduction, and we are just delighted to be here and delighted to have this opportunity once again to share the ancient principles of Aramaic forgiveness. We're here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's actually surprisingly warm, very pleasantly warm. It's almost 70 degrees, although it is cloudy and rainy, but pretty nice day all in all, considering we're into almost the middle of October and lots happening here. We had a very exciting workshop last night on creating consciously at Unity here. And for anybody that's in the Grand Rapids area, we'll be doing a full week of workshops here. So we'll be here all week through Friday night doing a series of free workshops. And Saturday, of course, the one workshop we started for, Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. We'll be doing that one on Saturday. But in the meantime, for me, last night, we were doing the workshop on creating consciously, and, you know, it was kind of like a breakthrough evening for me, an opening into another level of insight into why it's so important for us to do our work, why in the scheme of things we have to develop the faculties with which to manage our lives instead of be managed from the outside. You know, there are three basic places that our lives can come from. There's the driven life, there's the controlled life, and then there's the inspired life. Only one of those is an original. The other two are, as we've talked about before, replicate lives. The replicate mind replicates whatever's in it. And, you know, you might remember a few years ago there was a very popular book about the purpose-driven life, and thank you very much. I'm not a cow. I don't need to be driven. I'd rather be inspired. And, you know, humans aren't designed to be driven as cattle are. We are designed to create an original life. And our purpose in this work is to support each person who makes contact with the work in really, truly creating an original life. One who is driven usually has a relationship with their power person that's been based in a lot of emotion. A lot of high energy, traumatic memories, or no memories at all because they were too traumatic to allow recall. And whenever those traumatic memories are activated, though they may never come to the surface, because of the pain involved in doing behaviors that displease the power person, most people have those dynamics remain totally unconscious and are driven by those unconscious dynamics. They are activated, they take over one's life, and it just runs them. It's interesting that the Aramaic is the only language on the planet that I know of that has a suffix that when you add that to a word means that that particular dynamic, whatever it happens to be, is unconscious and is driving this person's perception, decisions, and behavior. So a driven life is not where you want to live. It is a totally replicate life. All it's doing is replicating what's happened throughout the generations. You know, Yeshua talked about this one as the dead who bury the dead and the blind who lead the blind. I was talking to a young lady this morning, and she was in a great deal of trauma. Her father and mother came over to announce to her that they were going to take her 16-year-old daughter and have her daughter live with them. And the trauma that she was in, and in tears, and this young woman's in her mid-30s, the 16-year-old daughter, in tears, talking about how, you know, here her parents and her father in particular just lavishes all this love on his granddaughter, and yet she speaks about remembering being a young teenager and just begging her father to say, I love you, and never hearing the words. Never having that experience. Now, I know these people personally, and I know that her father loved her deeply, but his deficiency was an inability to say it, and that led her to interpret things about herself that still drive her life. And so we hold the space for her healing and anyone else who's driven by those kinds of unconscious dynamics, that kind of unconscious pain. And what we're here to resolve in the world, what we're here is to share the tools that Yeshua developed 2,000 years ago. And there is nothing on the planet that even starts to compare with the efficacy of using these tools. You don't have to believe in Yeshua. You don't have to believe me. In fact, I usually suggest to people, don't believe a word I'm saying. Just take the tool and work with it and watch what happens. You know, if you've got a nice new car sitting out in the driveway, you don't have to believe anything about it. You don't even have to know anything about it except how to drive, where to put the key, and how to hit the gas and the brake, and you drive away. So it is with these tools. You put the tool to work, and it works. It's amazing. If you haven't come into possession of the tool of forgiveness yet, we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and in the center of the page, you'll see a bullseye. Click that bullseye, and that'll lead you into a set of instructions for how to use the tool of forgiveness. Take it. Use it. Watch how it changes your life. And stop being driven by unconscious dynamics. Then, the second place that many people's lives come from is that controlled place where, because of the power person dynamic and the authority issue in their lives, the external force, the external power has instilled in the child's mind, when the child was unable to refuse it, didn't know any better, child's mind, trauma, control. And instead of teaching the child that the child could be empowered to set their own goals for themselves, they created so much intimidation, the power person created so much intimidation that this child thought that if the external power, if the authority framed the goal, then the child had to set the goal and now is controlled all of their lives. Somebody says jump and they say how high, and then they do it because they're controlled by those external energies. Or at least on the surface, that's what's happening. But it's really, once again, being controlled by unconscious dynamics, a little different than the driven life. And then there's original creation. And that was our focal point last night, on creating consciously. That when we create our lives consciously, we have a whole different game than that of the driven or controlled life. And one is able to tune into and tap into a higher set of faculties with which to create. And instead of being limited to just what's locked into this multi-generational database that we call a body-mind unit, instead of being locked into the data that's there, this person has access to far broader ranges of data and is able to bring in totally new, completely unseen experiences, particular person's bloodline, and perhaps even to the world. That's what the creative geniuses of the past have tapped into. Einstein has an interesting quote that he gives us, and he says this. Give me just a second. I was just looking at it. Let me look it up here. So Einstein says this. Oh, come on, where are you? Just had it a moment ago. Ah, here we are. The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. And the faith recognizes that the servant, the rational mind, can originate nothing new. All it can do is replicate the past. We're designed to go beyond that. Our culture doesn't like it. Kings don't like it because people who go beyond that can't be controlled anymore. And since the game of kings, generally speaking, is to control others, that's why force, brute force weapons were created, then we end up with an insane world. Now, whether the king is the little tyrant in your own house or whether it's the one that's sitting on a throne somewhere, it's time for us to get out of the control of the kings and back into relationship directly with the Creator. That's what we're here to do. That's what we're here to support you in doing. And so, Michelle, it was fun to have you at the workshop last night. I don't know if the workshop struck you the way that it struck me last night, but for me, the way the material came together in particular last night, although I've done that workshop 1,000 times, it just tweaked me in a new way of this whole idea that we have to do the work if we really want to live a human life to become conscious creators rather than unconscious. How did that strike you last night? And we were delighted to see you at the workshop last night.
I agree, Michael. I felt some type of shift in the information. To be honest, both days were powerful. The why is this happening to me again workshop on Friday was profound. And I was so glad to be able to share it with my children. And yesterday, I've the Creative Consciously tape and audio tape CDs is one of my favorites of the bunch, and I have never heard you present it live, and there certainly is a different energy that comes across, especially when you're sitting in the front row. I was moved to tears a couple times. I don't know if you noticed that, but I also, yeah, it was good. And I took 10 pages of notes, and again, to remember and try to capture for myself my insights as well as help to integrate and build brain cells while I was listening to you. I've already used part of it today on a particular person who, when I was pointing out some resonance and the responsibility they had, they automatically came up with, "Why are you blaming me?" And I went and got my notebook, and I refreshed my memory and explained to this person the concept that you shared about responsibility, and that most of us think about responsibility as blame, fault, bad, guilty, but rather removing the frequencies that are disintegrative and the responsibility that comes with moving back to love.
Yeah, and out of last night's workshop, I actually have spent most of the morning renovating that workshop and just reorganizing the information to go in the direction of energetically what struck me last night. It was just really powerful for me. So glad you were there. And I understand that the whole support group might be coming tonight. I talked to Tony earlier this morning.
Yes. I told him, hey, you guys, I'm not going to be there, so I'm taking a van. How about you come with me? And so they agreed to that, and we're going to take a van full and head out tonight to see the presentation. Hey, because, of course, miracles is something that I've really always been interested in and have studied on my own. And it always seems that when it's time to pick a new DVD in our support group, we never get around to it. So I'm very excited because I haven't ever heard your you know, discussion on that. And so I'm really looking forward to that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, is Dr. Tim with us today?
Yep, Dr. Tim is here. Hey, Tim.
Hello, Michelle. Hello, Michael.
Hey there, young man. How do you be?
I'm doing fabulously well, thank you.
Good. I'm still working on putting the material together for the video edit that's coming, so that's just one more little thing on the plate here as we settle into Grand Rapids and really get the energy moving here and get ready to head to Lansing for next week's workshop series. So,
did you receive a copy of the video?
I have not yet received a copy of the video.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm
you.
Oh no, no, I haven't heard anything. I would assume he's going to connect with you directly, but maybe he will connect with me. Didn't he?
Yeah, I think he wasn't going to get to doing the first, sinking of it until the 16th, if I remember correctly. So.
Okay. Well, I will check with him soon after that and make sure he's still on track. And it's exciting to hear about a new shift in the material coming through for you.
Yeah, I actually found myself wishing that I were doing that workshop again tonight or that I was doing it next week in Lansing. Because Lansing and Grand Rapids are so close, we set up a totally different series. But I found myself wishing I were going to be doing it again immediately to just solidify it all.
Well, it's I don't remember from the video. This one is Empowered to Heal you're talking about?
No, this was On Creating Consciously.
On Creating Consciously. I don't remember from the video that we have, which is quite old now, or should I say mature, that you talk in there about the three types of life, controlled, driven, and inspired. So I think that three-level concept is newer than the video we have about On Creating Consciously. And I've heard you do that in a couple live performances already. So it's
codependent.
Exciting.
Yeah,
to
that's
think
the
that
piece
gonna
that I've always
again.
Put in the codependence for. Oh, excuse me.
Well, it's just exciting to hear that it's going to come out again in a new level and just get more some more refinement. Because I think it's essential to what we're recommending people do at every level when we suggest that they pick up a worksheet. I mean, it really is about just taking full responsibility for your life and not letting somebody else set goals for you and not let old goals you have set that didn't get fulfilled run your life. And so every time we clear out the old baggage, it opens a space where it's easier for us to listen to that still small voice and become inspired. So if you've got another level of the teaching coming through that helps refine that even more, that's exciting to hear.
Well, the driven, controlled, inspired piece actually is one that I've always done in the codependence workshop. But there's new information that's come into the codependence workshop, so recently I've kind of bumped that out of there, and it fits so perfectly in here. It just opens another space in the On Creating Consciously workshop. So it's certainly a constant process.
Well, and one of the things that I was going to mention today, I think in my mind this dovetails quite nicely, and that is that if you're teaching people specifically how to clear the space so that they can have their own direct experience with their higher intelligence or the creative force, or whatever they want to call it, then it clears the space for them to be living a life that is other than driven or controlled. And that's so important because our society often is off the rails precisely because we aren't listening to our own internal guidance and we're looking to outside experts. And I'm pretty sure I mentioned this to you back along the line, but when I was clearing out some old lists, I ran across the article that I wanted to mention today, which is about a book that was written, and the headline of the article is, "Psychiatry Now Admits It's Been Wrong in Big Ways." The question is, can it change? And the title of the book that was written in 2010, now this article was written in March of this year, but the title of the book is referring to, the book came out in 2010, and the title was Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. That's the book title.
Right.
And when it first came out, this author was attacked violently, of course.
I bet.
But then he won the 2010 Investigative Reporters and Editors Book Award for Best Investigative Journalism. This and other acclaim made it difficult for the establishment psychiatry to ignore him. So he was invited to speak at many of their bastions, including at a Harvard Medical School Grand Rounds and at Massachusetts General Hospital, where he faced hostile audiences. However, his sincerity about seeking better treatment options, his command of the facts, and his lack of anti-drug dogma compelled all but the most dogmatic psychiatrists to take him seriously.
Hmm.
And the keys in the article are just about how we have these theories that are put out there, and then they become, you know, urban legend, and then they become a good marketing tool for the drug companies, and then they become common knowledge, except they're not based on any kind of evidence. You know, things like the use of all the antipsychotic medications for people who are schizophrenic and psychotic and bipolar, and the use of the talk of a disease model for psychiatric diagnoses, and the talk of low serotonin as a theory for depression, and the talk of chemical imbalance as a known factor in psychiatry. All of those have no evidence, and psychiatrists themselves will tell you, yeah, that's just a theory and there really isn't any evidence to back it up. And the most recent version of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is the quote, Bible, unquote, for the psychiatrists, was so attacked for its lack of psychiatric validity that last year the National Institutes of Mental Health director stated that the National, this is a quote, NIMH will be reorienting its research away from the DSM categories. So they're so arbitrary, they're so driven by the politics of the committee, and they're so driven by factors other than evidence that's compiled consistently within good practice that demonstrates this is how something works, that the National Institutes of Mental Health has finally said, okay, that's not even useful for us anymore. And this is the tool that psychiatrists and psychologists are supposed to use to give people the diagnosis or the label that helps people understand what's wrong with them and how to fix it. And what they're saying is there's simply no evidence for how that works. And further evidence for that is that occasionally they rewrite the book and they change the label. And now what used to be a disease isn't a disease anymore. Why? Because we rewrote a book, not because anything changed in anybody's life. So the point, to get back to what you were saying, is the more we can assist people to have an intuitive life, to listen for, to hear, and act from their own internal wisdom, the Creator wanting to express through them, the more we free them from this, we free ourselves from this following, blindly following these authority figures, these external authorities. Anyway, that was my offering for today.
Pretty powerful, pretty important stuff for sure. And yeah, unfortunately, financial interests tend to drive a lot of things in the world, and that's not the only example of it. That the stock price is what determines what becomes official. It's pretty amazing, and you know, to me, it just points up one more time the importance of us getting back to living as human beings. It's this presence of love that we're designed to live as, and to cultivate the faculties that empower us to do that. And looking at the long haul, when I say the long haul, I'm talking about thousands of years, this technology, these tools, the way to deal with mental illness and physical illness has been known for thousands of years. But it doesn't serve financial interests to empower people to deal with them themselves. And so we've moved farther and farther away from empowering people and deeper into the insanity of confounding the possibilities through things like you're talking about with his manual, and keeping people in that that space where the authority controls them. It's just, it's so all-pervasive in the culture, it's just amazing. And, of course, as each person wakes up, the game changes. That's pretty cool.
Well, it's out there. It isn't getting a lot of publicity, but books like that are out there, and articles that indicate that drug companies are not putting as much research into those medications anymore because there isn't any scientific evidence to demonstrate their effectiveness is available. It's just not well publicized.
But what was the name of the article again?
Okay, so I have to get back to the top of the page here. The article was by Bruce E. Levine, and the title of it is "Psychiatry Now Admits It's Been Wrong in Big Ways, but Can It Change?" And the book title is, it's a 2010 book, "Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America," by Robert Whitaker.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that input. That's good information. I think that's the kind of information that empowers people, and what we're here to do is to support people being empowered in creating that original life that we're designed to create. So, cool to have a team like the one we've got. It's amazing.
You know what it makes me think of, Tim, is that I got my latest version, the DSM-5, the May Before Last, and I paid over $200 for that privilege. It's better used as a doorstop, if you ask me.
I'd be asking for a refund. I'm serious. Hold them accountable. If nobody holds them accountable, it's just going to keep on going.
Well, there are all kinds of people doing that in different ways, including the National Institutes of Mental Health and some of the insurance companies, which have now said they're just going to use the international code rather than the DSM. So they're having their own backlash in little waves privately, but the bigger picture for, you know, our, I think our discussion is for each of us individually to clear the way, to remove the anger, the fear, the sadness, you know, to pay attention to the internal alarm system when it goes off that directs me to, there's a problem inside me when I have anger. There's a problem inside me when I have fear. And to undo my culture's conditioning, which makes me want to go chase after somebody else and blame them for what's going on inside me. And one issue right. at a time, one breath session at a time, one worksheet at a time, that's my work. And that's life-changing.
Yes. And, you know, the question in that article, and can they change, is really one that we want to put the word we in that question. Can we change? Are we willing to do what it takes to change individually and collectively? It's not, you know, to me, that's the most relevant piece in that article.
I would
so
agree.
Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. If you're in the phone queue and you have a question, push 1, and that'll raise a hand, and Michelle will know you want to talk to us. And, of course, you can listen on your computer. If you go to our website, whyagain.org, there's a link that you can listen to the radio show. So, Michelle, do we have anything happening in the chat room to be aware of? Any questions or thoughts there? And or is there anybody with a hand up?
Yeah, in the chat room today, people are commenting about the discussion. There's one person who works as a pharmacy technician, and they're just amazed at the amount of drugs people are on. And so actually it made me think of the PDR as well. And then Peace, you know, talking about using the problem of using physical senses rather than adjusting the brain, the mind energy to remove blockages. So, yeah, nice little conversation going on here. And area code 828 has had their hand up since the beginning. So you're on the air. Who do we have and where are you calling from?
Hi there, Michelle and Dr. Tim and Dr. Michael Reich. This is Magda in Missouri.
Hello.
Welcome, young lady.
Hi. I'm using my phone that has a North Carolina number.
It's tricky.
Well, I'm asking a question for Susan Darnell. Her and I were having conversation this morning. Where I think you remember that we made a dedication along with Marianne, to review each page of the Laws of Living. So we do contact each other each day to report when we finish that. And she asked if I could call in a question for her and her support group, which will be meeting tonight. And it's about an explanation and information about the 5 smooth stones. And I look forward to hearing this too. So that's it.
Cool. Well, before I get into that question, let me just share that one other thing around this whole idea of drugs. There's a woman that I was speaking with who's a researcher in the medical field, and she shared that she was privy to information of a meeting of pharmaceutical companies who are currently setting up a plan. Now, I don't have first-hand knowledge of this, but this is what was shared with me, and she's pretty well connected in this arena, that the plan is to have 100% of the people in America on treatment, and I don't remember what year she said, on treatment for type 2 diabetes.
Yeah.
That's the plan. When you recognize that this industry is not about curing disease, you know, we get a lot of emotional appeals from people about, you know, this piece of research or that piece of research. But find me a researcher that's looking for cause and great. Let's create some fundraising. Find a researcher that's looking for another poison to try to control symptoms, and thank you very much. I don't care what the emotional appeal is. They can use all the pink ribbons and all the children's faces that they want. It's about customers. It's not about cause. Sadly, it's not about healing. And it's just a fact of the way it is. And I think everything you just shared with Dr. Tim just sort of backs that up. So it's just, it's one of those things to be aware of, one of those things to breathe through. If there is pain, if there's turmoil, if there's trauma around it, that's the next worksheet, that's the next piece of work to do. And it's just, you know, the thing that really set me off on this search initially was I was almost dead three or four times the first year of my life, and for 25 years didn't go anywhere without an inhalator and took pills every day, and realized that that was killing me and that I had to do something to change, because it was not creating any kind of healing in my physiology or my life. And so this work is a result of that search, inspired by my own experience of living on an inhalator and pills, and realizing that that was a stopgap measure. You know, I think that sadly a tremendous number of people lose out on healing because they opt for treatment. And I, as I said the other day, I envision a day when every physician, when they offer treatment, which we all know is about symptoms, when they offer treatment, at the same time they offer support for healing, so that there's actual healing that occurs in this treatment process rather than substituting treatment for healing. And so that's the space I hold, and there are more and more physicians around the country that are creating that option and supporting people in really, truly healing themselves. While, you know, it doesn't mean don't ever use a drug, because in the right hands for crisis management, there's no question a drug can save a life. But are they about healing? Are those substances about healing? No, they're about symptom control, which has its place, no question. But its place is not about healing. And we need to bring those two into juxtaposition with each other and parallel them. So the question, or Susan's question, and I just really want to congratulate and acknowledge Susan for her class. You know, she did Laws of Living last year, came back and did it again this year as a review. And she left, of course, the early part of September. And 2 weeks ago, she started her first Laws of Living class. And she's got 7 participants in a 9-week Laws of Living. We're actually going to get to go to Wilmington, and on Monday night that we're going to be speaking at Unity for the week. We're actually going to take that evening off of our workshops, and we're going to go and do still point breathing with her Laws of Living class. So that's a pretty cool opportunity, and accolades to you and her commitment level, and the feedback I'm getting from people that the class is just opening up and moving really powerfully. So the question about the 5 smooth stones and what is that all about? And, you know, to lay a foundation for that, let's look at the story of David and Goliath. You know, we hear about this 9-foot-tall giant who's so muscle-bound and has such weapons and is so fearsome and has swords and shields and, you know, helmets, and nobody will even meet him on the battlefield. And that's a metaphor, you know, just like when we tell the story about the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years, you know, how does a bright group of people get lost in a 30-square-mile area for 40 years? It's not conceivable. That's not what they're talking about. There's another level of understanding, and that is the desert being the unconscious, the state of functioning out of this being driven or controlled, and that we have to awaken beyond that. And the result, or pardon me, the solution to getting out of the desert, if you read that passage in the Old Testament, is that the old generation has to die off. And, of course, people interpret that as everybody in old physical bodies have to physically die. But the root of the word generation is genari, which means cause. And what it means is all of the causes held in the mind have to be removed to get out of the state of unconsciousness. And that state of unconsciousness, if anybody's ever said, you know, the person who smokes, I've run into somebody, oh, yeah, I'm an expert at quitting. I've done it 1,000 times. And you can't tell the mind what it's going to do directly because it doesn't work. And it's like Goliath. It will rear its head back. You know, somebody, I used the example on Sunday at church, speaking in the Sunday service here. You know, the person who, hearing and realizing that they're loved, goes home and says to the people around them, you know, I realize now that I am loved, that you are loved, and from now on I'm going to treat you lovingly. And, of course, they totally, completely believe and understand that that's what they're going to do. Actually, I had someone I was talking to a few weeks ago, and he's like, you know, when I went through that last layer of rage, I thought I would never rage again. And, of course, a very short time later, the next layer comes up for healing. And so the person who makes that commitment to be loving, the next time somebody gives them the look, the commitment is, for most people, pretty much gone. Why? Because of Goliath. Because this mind, this multi-generational database, which has stored in it, and it's stored in physiology, all of the cries, the pains, the traumas, the non-functional solutions of a thousand generations. Now, it's got the good stuff too, but here's the problem. Why does the negative stuff tend to override the positive stuff? Because the negative stuff has been repeated over and over and over again, and the scream tends to get louder, which intensifies the energy and makes it more noticeable than the quieter celebration of, something that works successfully. So we have the successful in there as well. But the tendency is for there to be an override of the screaming mind and its rage and its pain and its trauma. And that's Goliath. And if anybody's ever tried to directly defeat Goliath, you know how tough that is. You want to quit smoking, you want to quit raging, you want to quit drinking, you want to quit eating junk food. And Goliath comes up and says, I run the show here. This is what we're going to do. You want to defeat Goliath? Well, the only way to defeat Goliath is to take him apart. How do you take Goliath apart? Well, recognizing that Goliath is just a symbol for all of the dynamics stored within carbon-based memory, stored within this body-mind unit. Then when you apply forgiveness, you literally weaken the frequencies of the voices of the past. You know, last week we talked about the research where in the lab they took these mice and they tie them down, and every time they bring the smell of a cherry blossom to the mice, this is at Emory University in Atlanta, they bring the smell of a cherry blossom, they shock the mouse, so the mouse is in terror and pain. And then they allow those mice to reproduce, and the next generation of mice who've never smelled a cherry blossom before, they bring the cherry blossom near them, and they're in terror and pain. It's passed energetically, genetically, to the next generation. They sacrifice those mice, and they look into their genes, they look into their brains, and the part of the brain that's responsible for smell has changed its structure, literally. And the genes have shifted and changed. These are generational patterns we've got in us a thousand generations, and sadly, a lot of it's raging and raving. You just have to look at the history of humanity. You know, you look at 275 million people murdered on planet Earth in the last 75 years in war. You look at, you know, I was in Greece a few years ago, and the level of smoking in Greece was just unbelievable compared to the rest of Europe. There's a huge population that smokes. And my take is, the reason is, if you look at the history of the Greeks, invasion after invasion, slaughter after slaughter, loss of land, loss of home, loss of family, loss of loved ones, over and over, onslaught after onslaught after onslaught. What does that create in you? What does that create? But this mind that's filled with this raging terror and pain, hate and grief and murder. And so constitutes Goliath. There was this one little guy who was so small that he couldn't even wear armor. He was too small, and he'd never been trained in battle. He was a shepherd boy. His name was David. And know, David volunteers to go out on the battlefield. Everybody else cowers. All the trained soldiers are like, I'm not going out there. That's sure death. And David says, I'll go take him down. And so David goes out onto the battlefield with Goliath, and he carries with him 5 smooth stones. Now, fortunately, in this incarnation, I have escaped any of this war training, but logically, if I were going to go onto a battlefield to do battle with someone, I'd be looking for the sharpest, most cutting stones I could find. Now, I've had people who've been trained in battle say, no, the smooth, round ones will fly more truly. Well, I think if you're in the kind of range where you can get a stone to somebody, a sharp one's going to do more damage and it's going to be just as accurate. But in any event, that topic aside, why do we have 5 smooth stones of David? My take is that they're called smooth stones because they're practiced faculties. There are 5 spiritual faculties. David, in our scenario, is symbolic of the being. You know, hold the newborn child. Everybody, when they describe the newborn, uses the same words, the same concepts, and they're all variations on the theme of love. That's the symbol that David is of that gentle creature called human. And there are 5 faculties with which David or you and I can take apart Goliath and defeat Goliath's control over us. Those 5 smooth stones each have a cheap copy that Goliath has replicated. And we get tricked into chasing after the cheap copy. It's not the real thing, and it won't work for us, but we get tricked into it. And you want to have the genuine article. What are the 5 smooth stones? Well, the first one is choice, or reason. Choice and reason are the abilities to take whatever Goliath is feeding you and sort through the valid from the invalid, and to know and understand and be able to choose to forgive the invalid, to be able to remove what does not belong. And it is the ability to bring new choices into Goliath's mind that perhaps have never shown up in our bloodline before. The cheap copy of that smooth stone, reason, or choice, is resonance. You know, if I say, don't think about the color of your car, what happens? Brain cells fire, and the average person says, when I say, well, what's happening? When I say, don't think about the color of your car, they say, well, I'm thinking about the color of my car. Well, if I took a tuning fork, a middle C tuning fork, and I hit it on a desk and I put it near a second middle C tuning fork, what would happen with the second tuning fork? Well, of course, Michael, it would start to vibrate. Okay. Is the second tuning fork thinking? Well, of course not. It's just resonance. It's just exchanging information. So when Goliath has content that resonates in the mind in response to a situation, there's no reason, there's no thinking involved there. That's just resonance. Brain cells are firing with whatever content is there. And if you are run by that, then you're living a controlled life. Not an original life, but a controlled life, controlled by resonance. And most people have so much emotional content and so many terrifying calls from past generations. I have to escape. I have to get out. I have to be able to be big and strong to be able to beat somebody else up. I have to be able to go to war. There are so many of these calls within carbon-based memory that the call seems irrefutable, undeniable, and must be followed. If the subtle faculty of human life is alive in that mind, then that human life says, excuse me, I have the ability to reason. For me, love, to fight, run, destroy, does not make sense. I am a human being. So I recognize these feelings and these calls that come from my past through resonance are simply things that I choose to forgive rather than follow them, although I so deeply want to follow them because it feels like I should. And, you know, you can imagine the mice who've been shocked and the next generation of mice, what happens to them? Let's imagine that the only food that will truly nourish and keep a mouse healthy is cherries. And yet with the brain changes and the genetic changes, the genetic methylation, this mouse says, cherry blossom smells, we've got to get out of Dodge, we've got to get out of here, this is going to be too painful. And that feels like such a compelling thing to do because it is painful because of the implants that have been put into the mind of the mouse through an aberrant experience. I wouldn't want the karma of the researcher that ties the mouse down and shocks them at the smell of a cherry blossom. Thank you very much. It's pretty cruel. But when you look at that implant, everything that comes forward in the mind based in hostility or fear comes from an implant that is out of an aberrant experience and one that needs to be forgiven. So the counsel I give to someone at this point is, if you feel like doing something and you don't know exactly the thought and the motivation behind it, then stop and don't do it. Stop doing what you feel like doing. Select a set of human principles by which you choose to live and commit yourself to living those principles. That's what my commitment on the website is about, is a set of human principles, a way of behaving that upholds human life. And so when carbon-based memory feels like going in the opposite direction, it's rage, it's guilt, it's grief, it's fear, it's need to escape, then I recognize this is not consistent with my humanness, and I forgive. So now, through reason and choice, I am dismantling the messages that come from Goliath that don't belong in my structure. Those things that are aberrant implants from the generation. So the second generation of mice, by the way, they went on and checked out the third generation of mice in exactly the same response. So the second generation of mice, instead of running away from the cherry blossom, stops and says, ooh, this feels like terror and pain. I think cherry blossom smells don't cause terror and pain. So there must be terror and pain in me that is resonated by this cherry blossom smell. I wonder why. Oh, there's an insane implant that comes from an experience that's not designed for my best. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose to forgive this terror and pain and remember that cherry blossoms and the cherries beyond the smell of the cherry blossom is what nourishes and nurtures me. So I'm going to go back to what nourishes and nurtures me. So many people, because of generations and generations and generations of traumatic relationships, for instance, you know, the solution every time one of those aberrant energies is resonated is, I need to get out of Dodge. I need to get out of here. Just like the rat or the mouse, pardon me, would say, we need to get away from these cherry blossoms. And yet, relationship is the thing that's designed to nurture us. It's a sacrament. It's a gift given to us to empower us.
Yeah, four more.
So, choice and reason are the first of the five smooth stones. The next one is will. And will, the cheap copy of will in the non-being mind, is willpower. And that is, I'll force this to happen no matter what. In the arena of the spiritual being, this one of the five smooth stones is the faculty with which we manage the output of our mind. The mind cannot be managed directly. You know, imagine that you're in the room that I'm sitting in, and we have an electric control here on the heating system. And I can't sit here, although the technology is coming that will allow me to do that. It's not here now. I can't sit here and say, Keith, I want you to turn up 5 degrees. It won't work. I can talk directly to the heater all I want. You can talk directly to your mind all you want. The heater is controlled through indirection. I have to walk over to the thermostat and change the setting on the thermostat, and then the heater will respond. In the same way, will manages goals, and goals manage the mind. Goals are the thermostat for the mind. We have thousands of goals in us from our genetic history, and they drive our feelings and they drive our behavior, and we're not even aware of what's there running them. And so, once again, apply forgiveness to the aberrant and develop the faculty of will to strengthen your ability to manage your own mind. Then the next smooth stone is intuition. As we quoted from Einstein earlier, this precious gift of intuition, and that is the ability to capture energies, information from all of the universe. You know, the physicists are telling us that every molecule in the universe is in continuous communication with every other molecule in the universe. It is not Goliath's mind that will allow you to tap into that, but your spiritual faculty of intuition will allow you to capture those frequencies and bring them into your mind and create with them. The of intuition is psychic. The problem with the psychic realm, while the psychic mind can capture information, what happens is the mind of the psychic will tend to taint all of the information that it gets with its own content. Imagine intuition comes directly and purely, where psychic comes through the mind and tends to have attached anything that's unresolved from the mind of the psychic. And so imagination is the ability to literally be, or pardon me, intuition is the ability to literally be in communication with all of the universe and allow it to teach you. The next of the five smooth stones is imagination. And the imagination, if you break the word down, is the ability to image in, to imagine, to bring that new frequency in and to assemble it in a way that it is meaningful. And with that imagination combined with intuition, bring new things into the world that have never been seen. Einstein said that his work was 90% intuition and 10% intellect. So the imagination is the ability to bring something new that's never been seen in the world. And as we do that, things open up. And then once we've moved into correction, I know our time is getting short, once we've moved into correction, then the fifth of the five smooth stones is that of true perception, that our mind perceives through carbon-based memory, and once we clean Goliath up, then the mind only gives us the truth. We have true perception, and with true perception, we are able to really, truly gather correct, only correct information from Goliath's mind. Otherwise, Goliath puts all, you know, like the cherry blossom smell, Goliath puts all of the pain and trauma of the past generations in. Having cleaned that up, we only get accurate and true data about what's happening in our world. So that would be my input about the five smooth stones. And we're down to just the last few seconds. Please say thank you to everyone. Join us tonight, all this week in Grand Rapids, if you're in this area, next week in Lansing, and then the next week, starting October 31st, we've got a 9-day codependence interdependence intensive happening here in Michigan. Thanks for joining us. Bring us train to the show tomorrow, and create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.